Hello and welcome to episode 332 of the Tala STEM podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, and roughly this week we have about 332 things to talk about with Reading FC kicking off in all kinds of directions, up, down, side to side, and forever twirling towards glory. So to do that with me is Adam Jones of Tala STEM, assistant editor. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. I think I picked a good week to come on. There's, as you say, about 300 things to talk about. So, yeah, it'll be good to get stuck in.
Yeah, we'll be having the whole chat to start with. 1-1 draw with Hull on Saturday. Plenty more to come in after that. Ball in, so we'll be hearing from him. Mailbag from you guys as well. See, plenty to talk about with news bites as well. Actually, with more news than we usually have ever this week. Probably more news we've had all season combined. And then we have an international break coming up. So Bristol City will have a little bit of a preview for that one. That's not till April the 1st, though. So I think in the meantime, even with no action, there's still a lot's going to be happening at the club. There's also actually a decent amount happening at the Tala STEM, as well as all the usual stuff on the website and social media. We'll be having a couple of podcasts coming to you over the international break. And I do not mean emergency podcasts for 6-point deductions and stuff like that. I had a little interview over about a week and a half ago. Went to do a little interview, which that's to say I'm very happy that we've done and should be good fun for everyone to listen to. So look out for that. And in the meantime, let's go into the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So 1-1 it finished then between Reading and Hull on Saturday. Not quite the last-minute own goal heroics that we went into the last international break with when we played Hull away. But this was a bit of a weird one, Adam. I felt like we had no midfield control whatsoever at the start of the game. Pretty much for the first half, actually. Hull, probably the better team for a good 80% of the first half or so. The goal from Regan Slater, 26 minutes in, pretty straightforward, really. Just kind of bust through the middle. Reading had welcomed back Liam Moore into the lineup, and then Scott Dan came on after Liam Moore picked up an unfortunate injury. That's probably the last time we'll see him in a Reading shirt. So they're saying he's probably going to be out for the season with that. And on the other side note, he looks gutted as anything to have picked up that unfortunate injury. And I really did feel for him. It was a nasty moment for an individual and a person, let alone a footballer. So that's unfortunate that that happened. But it did mean that the goal coming through the middle, Scott Dan kind of caught out. I felt with the balls pretty straight through, really, and then the finish. Reading did get back into it, though. But, I mean, that first half in particular, just kind of for a home game and for, you know, against a team like Hull, who are in mid-table and stuff, a team that we want to do well against, obviously, it just didn't have the vibe of a team that were really going to be pushing hard and getting the win in a winnable game.
Yeah, it's a very frustrating one. I think there was a lot of kind of a lack of quality really on the ball, a real lack of, I guess, creativity as well going forward. Obviously, we had a couple of headed attempts in the first half. Obviously, Zhao went reasonably close, but yeah, again, it's the same old problem with the creativity. It's it is massively frustrating. Obviously, Hull City, I think, have improved quite a bit really under Liam Rossini. They weren't too good under Shota Arveladze, you know, throughout his tenure, really. So, you know, with Liam Rossini, they're kind of getting the ball down on the floor and you know, they did some nice passing. I mean, in terms of the whole game, they didn't do too much, to be honest with you, but they're a team very much that's kind of like a work in progress. And for us at the moment, it just feels like we're a sinking ship. So, yeah, I'm not really surprised that it wasn't the kind of the best or the most entertaining game in the world. And I think both sides will be disappointed not to have had perhaps more kind of shots on goal, especially us, you know, in terms of us being the home team. And I guess that perhaps the last couple of home defeats kind of maybe knocked our confidence a little bit, but that's no real excuse. I mean, the lack of quality on show was very, very concerning, really. And it's just a massive shame that we weren't able to produce more, because I felt like that game was there for the taking.
Yeah, it definitely was. And this is the thing, is that as it got into the second half, I think Hull dropped off in the second half quite a bit. And Reading, I mean, you have Cassidy, Hendrick and Ince, which is a pretty decent midfield three for Championship and certainly has a bit about it in terms of creativity. But with McIntyre left wing back, he was withdrawn through injury, and I actually thought as he was coming off, not a bad thing for Reading to have Guinness Walker coming on, and he proved to have a pretty decent performance down the left. Yeardham on the right, you know, kind of what you're going to get. It's not going to be groundbreaking, but I think with that kind of very narrow emphasis of Ince and Cassidy being the only ones who can really create anything at all. And then up front, I just feel like this is the problem that I have with this team at the moment, is that Mate's injured, Long's injured. Otherwise, you're picking kids. And I think the kind of Femi Azeez bandwagon has slowly drifted to a halt. Now he's had his chance and not really taken it. So I can understand why Paul Ince went with Zhao and Carroll up front. But they cannot play together. There is nothing that they can do that works in tandem with the other one. I mean, Andy Carroll goes up for a few headers and stuff during the game. Generally happens, you know. He gets the goal. It took two dreadful whole errors for us to score, but fine. Zhao, I mean, in his contract year as well, you really worry for where he'd be ended up next season, because 2 years ago he was worth £10 million. And now, I mean, I wouldn't even get close to offering him a new contract as it is. And he had a very late chance where he just doesn't shoot for whatever reason. And it's incredibly frustrating. And this is the problem that is. Do you in any way feel sorry for Paul Ince that he has, you know, this, you know, basically for the rest of the season? I don't know when Yaki Mate is back, but Zhao and Carroll are kind of his only options. He has to go to one up front. I mean, this is the thing that Paul Ince has surely got to realise, that he can't play them together.
Yeah, I don't think you can play them together. I don't think the mobility is there. There's not the right mix, to be honest with you. And to an extent, I do feel sorry for him a little bit, because obviously with all of the injuries at the moment, and, you know, he's dealt with injuries earlier on in the season, and now at this point where it's really important, he's got quite a few players out, and you know, you do have to feel for him because there are some experienced players out as well, like Shane Long and Junior Hoyler. But for me, he's got to stick with a sort of system and just kind of, yeah, as I said, stick with it, to be honest with you, because, you know, it feels like we're going to and from a back three and a back four all the time, and that can't really help. So for me, 100%, I'd go with a 3-4-2-1, to be honest with you. I'd definitely have Lucas Zhao on his own up front. I think he can do that job. I mean, with the chance late on in the game, it's kind of almost unforgivable, really. But perhaps that's a sign of a striker who hasn't really been given a massive chance to shine, really, under Paul Ince this season. So maybe I will kind of let him off the hook for that. But I definitely have Lucas Zhao up front. To be honest with you, I'd still have kind of Femi Azeez or maybe even Cassidy in an advanced midfield role with Tom Ince and perhaps have, well, when Loom's back, maybe have him and maybe have Fornar as well. I don't think Tyrese Fornar's been given enough of a go, to be honest with you. You know, he may not be a hugely special player at the moment, but you feel he's someone that we could sign in the future, maybe permanently. So not giving him a go, it just feels like a little bit of a waste, really. But I definitely have him and maybe Fornar, Loom, or maybe Hendrick there as kind of a midfield two. And then, you know, I think that the back five, I think at the moment, with all the injuries, maybe even picks itself. You've got Guinness Walker on the left, Andy Yeardham on the right. Mbenga, definitely, I'd have him back in the starting lineup. Holmes and Saar, perhaps, as a back three, and Lumley in goal. I'd definitely stick with the 3-4-2-1. I think that's the formation for me that makes the most sense. So I think midweek against Blackburn kind of exposed kind of how bad kind of we were in the back four. I mean, Tom McIntyre at left back, he was getting ripped to shreds really by Sorba Thomas, and he wasn't really in competition with Thomas at all. So for me, I definitely have a back three. We can still 100% be attacking going forward with the back three, with the wing backs, with, you know, Guinness Walker and Yeardham. They can be a threat going forward. So for me, I do feel sorry a little bit for Ince because of all the injuries, but he's just got to have one particular formation that he goes with, and he's got to have, you know, faith in some of his players, because, you know, he's chopping and changing quite a bit.
Yeah, his lack of faith in, to an extent, and Mbenga, I think also definitely Guinness Walker and Fauna really has been, I'd say, needlessly low. I don't quite understand it when he's stuck with other players. I mean, he sees the players every day and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think that in the whole game, it really was a microcosm of the problems that we've had under Paul Ince and such. And that, you know, late on in the game, there was the clamour from the crowd to get the ball moving out of Lumley. He was picking up the ball and just kind of holding on to it for a little while. And it didn't really suit getting a winner, obviously, and the fans weren't happy with it. So you look around though as he was waiting, and the players were jogging up and they weren't powering forward to go and get the ball. And Paul Ince says afterwards, you know, they were knackered after 75 minutes. And you hear that and you think, yeah, Paul Ince, generally speaking, is quite good at identifying the problems in his team. There's no doubt that mostly what he says, his team isn't good enough to play the ball out from the back. I'd say that's probably true. He, over the, you know, general period of his being a manager, he's been able to spot problems in the club, if you think right back to the start. But then his ability to find solutions is incredibly poor, isn't it? It's because, yes, the players were knackered. So why did he not make his final changes? He had three changes to make in one go if he wanted to use them. And he waited until the 87th minute to bring them on. And yeah, the bench isn't amazing. But if, fundamentally speaking, your players are knackered, what's the point of keeping them on if you've got someone, you know, like Mbenge off the bench if you want to use them, or Fauna Aziz, who did eventually come on? But that's just the problem with Paul Ince at the moment, is that his ability to work his way out of a problem and kind of maneuver Reading into doing something different than what's already, you know, his setup at home, generally speaking, has worked this season. So he hasn't had to change very much. His setup away from home hasn't worked at all, and he hasn't been able to change it. So this is kind of the thing, is that if it doesn't work first time for Paul Ince, he may well know that it's not working, but he can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, and I think he's, to be honest with you, I think he's far too cautious. And I think he's kind of, I think one of the reasons why he didn't change anything until the last stages of the game on Saturday is because he was perhaps a bit too scared of suffering a loss. I think at times, and we say the same with Gareth Southgate for England, perhaps sometimes he needs to take the handbrake off and really kind of go for it. You know, I think perhaps at times we've seen Guinness Walker not go forward as much as we saw him earlier on in the season. And perhaps that's a confidence issue, but perhaps that's also a Paul Ince instruction. But yeah, for me, it's all about being too cautious, to be honest with you. I think at times he just needs to kind of, well, just let us express ourselves. We, you know, I understand and I'm fully aware that we haven't got the best squad in the world, but, you know, let the likes of Ince and Cassidy kind of express themselves and get the wing backs forward and see what you can do kind of in the final third. You know, for me, that would be my wish, to kind of let the players express themselves and get them forward, because, you know, at this stage and with a potential points deduction in mind, I'm sure we'll talk about that later on. You know, we need points on the board and we need wins on the board. So for me, yeah, he just needs to kind of take the handbrake off a little bit.
No, I understand what you mean. So let's hear from Paul Ince now, and then we'll go into the mailbag and hear from you guys later in the show.
So the game was okay. The game was okay. I think the most important thing was to kind of stop the rot. Obviously, we've lost all of us against teams in the top five. And today, you know, we didn't start off too well. We looked a bit leggy the first 10, 15 minutes, conceded a goal, and that kind of jerked us into reaction. Had some great moments, you know, where we could have two or three goals. And I think when we got the goal from AC, I think it was more than justified. Was on the front foot, and just not, things not falling for us and that, you know. So going in at half time, I said to the players, listen, you know, the next goal wins it, you know, the next goal wins it, and that never came.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis, and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
So the usual array of questions that we've got this week. Thanks to everyone who gets in touch over the Twitter, particularly the call out that we do before each show for you to get your thoughts and your questions in. Claire D saying so many questions, but we never get any answers from the club. Paul saying statement from Reading FC is what he wants. And HSN actually saying, where do you think we'll finish in League One? We'll approach the League One subject in due course, I'm sure, in this season on the podcast. But the situation now, as we'll talk about a bit more in news bites, with the finances have come out this week, and Reading paying 150% of their revenue to wages now, for player wages, which has actually gone down. It was 200% plus for the last couple of seasons. So there's signs of progress. But we're also now in a situation waiting for a six-point deduction. Paul Ince has said that next Thursday is kind of the cutoff for that arriving. There's also been, I think, the Chronicle saying it's going to be this week. Alan Nixon, report for The Sun, saying it might not be that soon because there's a lot to work out still. And Wigan have been today handed a 3-point deduction for their not paying players on time. So that's all the situation, basically. In terms of what these guys have asked in the mailbag, Adam, is communication from the club going to solve anything? I'm always loath to be in the opinion that, you know, a statement will make things go away, because they obviously won't, will they? So if there was to be a statement, what would it look like for you to be worthwhile?
I mean, that's a very good question. I think for me, it's a little bit too late. They needed to be proactive instead of reactive. I sent out a tweet earlier on in the season. I think it was last September when we were doing well. I said, this is the time where the hierarchy need to speak out and kind of really show supporters that we've moved on since the shambles of last season. Unfortunately, a lot of them chose not to speak. Dai Yong didn't choose to speak. And the fact that they didn't and kind of didn't capitalise on that moment to kind of speak out, it's kind of, I feel like it's amateurish in a way. You know, this was such a good opportunity for them and they failed to take it. So for me, I don't really have kind of much sympathy for them at the moment. I know they can't give us too much on our future plans at the moment, obviously, because we're in an embargo at the moment and we're not sure what things are going to look like in the summer in terms of what league we're in or in terms of what restrictions we'll face in the transfer market. So I completely appreciate the fact that they can't give us too much on our future plans at the moment. But they've got to speak out about what they've done perhaps in recent months to make things better. Swansea City CEO Julian Winter always gives an update to the fans, and I feel like Dion Pang could do something similar, you know, about what he's done to make the club better, you know, what he's going to do to make the club more sustainable in the future. I just feel like there was things that could have been done. In terms of a statement now, I mean, there's not much they can really say at the moment in terms of points deduction, but you know, obviously, as I said, they can't give too much on future plans at the moment. But as I said, just kind of give us an overview of what's been done, how you plan to kind of make things better, what you've already done to make things better, and just give the fans something to be, you know, just something to hold on to. It doesn't need to be massive. And I completely agree with you when you said, you know, a statement won't solve everything, but this needed to be a gradual process of kind of communicating more with the fans right from the start of kind of this season, in terms of making sure that, you know, you kind of let the fans know that we've moved on. Unfortunately, it's been, I wouldn't say deadly silent, because obviously Bowen has done, you know, a podcast and he's done interviews, but, you know, other key figures need to step up to the plate. And unfortunately, they failed to do so. So unfortunately, I'm sorry, I can't have too much sympathy. And for me, that's the one reason why I feel a little bit panicky, is because of the lack of communication. It's not just because of the points deduction, which could have been for historical misdemeanors. And if that's the case, then for me, the main kind of bugbear that I have is with the communication. It's just not been good enough at all. Even though, you know, we've had a statement on the points deduction, in the kind of in general, in terms of the whole kind of season, it's just not been good enough.
No, I don't think anyone can disagree with that. And yeah, it's a good point that you know, the time to get out and say, you know, this is what's happening, this is where we're going with the club. It has kind of happened bits, but the communication direct from Dai Yong and obviously from Pang, who's this chief executive, basically his right-hand man, as we understand it, hasn't been there. And I suppose now we are in a waiting game to see what happens. And then, you know, if a points deduction does come, there has to be something, doesn't there, really? Speaking of how decisions get made in the club, M. Hawksen, who actually got the players into the club? Was it Ince or Mark Bowen or Brian Carey? Carey being the chief scout. Mark Bowen is, of course, head of football, and Paul Ince. Paul Ince doesn't strike me as the manager who goes and gets players very much. He might drop them a phone call, as managers do. You hear a couple of times they'll kind of tempt a player over in that sense. But I think in terms of who got the players into the club, you can only assume that it's between Bowen and Carey. And this is one of my kind of overarching feelings at the moment, is that there's a lot of deja vu to last season at the moment, isn't there, with the whole points deduction, all this sort of stuff, with the position of the team. Obviously, if the points deduction will knock us right onto the brink that we otherwise wouldn't be in. And fundamentally, There's actually off the pitch. We did a lot of hard work last summer. Bowen and Carey being two people of quite a few who kind of changed position, came back and moved and all that sort of stuff. So I kind of feel like off the pitch, and as the question alludes to, in terms of bringing players in, I kind of have a bit more faith in, well, a lot more faith in the club than this time last season. But for me, the off the field stuff in terms of recruitment and transfer department stuff, I feel like that's kind of fine at the moment. That's if we were to build a list of issues at the moment, the off the pitch running of the club as we know it, in terms of the football side with Bowen and Carey, I'm kind of okay with it. But I suppose that's just because there's so many other issues to contend with.
Yeah, I'm completely happy with the recruitment last summer. You know, there may have been perhaps hits and misses, and people have different opinions on different signings. But in terms of the players that we brought in terms of the, you know, kind of within the budget that we had, you know, I'm reasonably satisfied with what we did. I think we need to have perhaps a clearer transfer strategy in the summer, perhaps when or if our kind of transfer restrictions are lifted. But in terms of what we've done, no, we haven't done too badly, really. So I can't really have any complaints about what we did in the transfer market. And, you know, I think they should perhaps be commended, the likes of Bowen and Carey. I do think that perhaps Paul Ince had a little bit of a say, perhaps getting the more experienced players in, like Jeff Hendrick and maybe even Andy Carroll, even though he's been here in the past. I do feel like he's had a little bit perhaps of an influence on things. But no, I can't really have many kind of complaints in terms of that. It's just, you know, I think the key decision now for Mark Bowen, if we can, I'm not sure what's happening with the rules and how it contributes to finances, but, you know, if he sacks Ince or not, I think that's how he's going to be judged, to be honest with you. You know, he did some fantastic work, as you said, in the transfer market, but, you know, this is perhaps his biggest decision so far in terms of whether to kind of get rid of Ince or keep him here. So, yeah, people will forget about what the work that had been done. But no, I completely agree with you in terms of the fact that the transfers were actually you know pretty decent. In terms of contracts, I mean, a four-year deal for Naby Sarr, maybe we weren't in the best position at the time. But in terms of, like, negotiating power, perhaps at the negotiating table, you know, perhaps we weren't fantastic in terms of that. You know, we didn't have too much power there. And maybe that's why Andy Carroll got an 18-month extension. So those are the two kind of things that I'd have an issue with. But in terms of what he's done overall, it's been okay so far.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of questions on the Paul Ince topic, which I think about 2-3 weeks ago there was a lot of discussion online. Obviously, that's only a very small portion of Reading fans, but a lot of people very pro Ince, a lot of people very anti Ince, and maybe the kind of anti sentiment has grown a little bit, or at least become more vocal since the whole game, really. In particular, and Alistair saying, do you think Ince will be sacked now or in the summer? Fab also asking, if the cost of sacking the manager has fallen foul of the business plan from the EFL and being deducted points in the future, is the gamble worthwhile knowing that neither action nor inaction guarantees championship football? Well, we obviously don't know the specifics on what Paul Ince's contract would and wouldn't say. I think he's in his last year of it next year anyway, so his compensation might not be huge, but I mean, to play the game as it were, and say what if it would make us fall foul of the business plan, then I don't think you can sack him on the basis that, you know, you don't want to hamper yourself for next season. Whatever we do, which I still believe that Paul Ince would take us away from relegation. But fundamentally, we have to make sure that we are not in a transfer embargo or with points deductions next season. Because if we keep having this for the next year, 2 years, 3 years, then it's just, what's the point? Like, what's the point of being a football club if you keep having these massive restrictions tied around you? You may as well just go home, because you can't be a football club like this for the medium or long term. As for whether Ince will be sacked, I mean, I just can't see it, Adam, because we would end up with a caretaker manager for the last 8 games or 7 games, whatever. And I mean, maybe that'd be Michael Jilks or someone like that, or even McKaylee Ledgetwood's obviously still at the club. I don't necessarily think any of those names spring out to me as, you know, relegation beaters, as it were. There's obviously talk of Graham Murty, but that's just a bit of a flimsy rumour, to be honest. And I can't imagine he'd want to come in now. given that he's currently with a club. He's currently doing something at Sunderland and probably has a connection to those players and wants to see as much of that job through as he can. So I just think that the Ince question, it's worth asking, and it's totally understandable that fans might want him gone, but I just can't, maybe, I don't know. Can you see it happening?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because can things really get much worse than they are right now? I mean, we've had some quite difficult games, of course we have, but it's just the manner in which we've lost some of these matches. I mean, I know that, you know, Preston lost 4-0 at Middlesbrough, I think, last weekend, and we kind of lost 5-0, so it's not that much different. But just the manner in which we kind of lose and draw games for me is the patience, I think, for me is wearing thin, and also the way that he conducts himself in interviews, you know, kind of post-match press conferences as well. And I ask myself, is this the way that Reading Football Club should be? Is this the way that the manager of Reading Football Club should be? And I keep on asking myself that question. I know that, you know, points have to be at the top of the agenda at the moment. It has to be the priority. And, you know, we could have a very unlikable character in charge right now, and we'd all take the points over having a nice manager and being relegated. But in terms of the long term, definitely not for me. Paul Ince taking us forward. In terms of whether he takes us forward for the remainder of the season, it's a difficult question because we don't know the kind of the punishment that will come or may or may not come if we do sack him. But for me, couldn't it really get much worse than it is at the moment? And that's the question that everyone has to ask themselves, because, yeah, it's pretty dire at the moment. And I don't know, I can see things getting slightly toxic if we don't take action. But, yeah, that's just my point of view, really.
Yeah, no, I understand. And this is the thing, we've got a massive split in the fan base at the moment. For every fan who would say that he's done a terrible job, I'm sure you'd find a fan that would say, this is the squad. We all thought it was going to be this tough, and the points deduction. I mean, if you take away, if Reading end up not getting a points deduction, which I believe there is like some minor chance of, whether it's 1% or whatever, then we won't get relegated. So that's the job done for many people's eyes for Paul Ince. Final couple of questions for Mailbag. Paul Dawson saying, if Ince thinks we were knackered, why weren't the subs made earlier? Why aren't Aziz and Bengay and Guinness Walker starting the games? What has Dan got on Ince? And does Tom Ince think he's much better than the rest of the team? There were some questions over Tom Ince and his, you know, his general demeanour over the pitch, particularly one time he just kind of lumped a Tom Holmes pass that wasn't even that far behind him, because he could kick it. After it had gone out of play, he lumped it back towards him. Paul Ince very much brushing that off. Earlier in the show, we talked about the subs and stuff, so I won't dwell too much on that here. And final question then, John Randall saying, what will it take to get the fans back on side and behind the team for the final part of the season? Some massive fixtures, which will need the mad stad rocking. And this is the question for me. Obviously, we'll go to Bristol City next, away from home. There's no doubt that the fans, hopefully in good numbers for that, will be in good voice, and that will kind of sort itself out. Birmingham at home after that. I mean, we've got home games with Burnley, Luton and Wigan left. Go to Preston, Coventry and Huddersfield. So let's say at least half of those games are perfectly winnable. Any home game is winnable. Maybe Burnley less so, but maybe we can stop them getting the 106 if they've not done that already. I've not quite worked out the maths on that. But I think that my fear with this is that last season, Reading fans, obviously, we got some very late results and it was all good fun. Sheffield United, Swansea and everything. We ended up staying up. That was all, you know, yeah. We did galvanise the team, galvanise the fans, galvanise behind the team. And everyone was kind of pushing in the same direction under Paul Ince, having a good time. And that kind of solved itself. The question is, can we do that again? Have Reading fans got the energy to do that again? Have Reading fans got the motivation to do it for Paul Ince again when a lot of Reading fans don't like him? So in terms of John's question, what will it take? Do you think that us getting deducted 6 points will be enough? Will that galvanise fans and you know, the players and everything to go again in a fight that we kind of didn't expect to be in?
For me, yeah, I think it might be perhaps one step too far if we did get a 6-point deduction. I think, you know, last year, I think we perhaps had the amount of mental strength and the spine, I think, in the team, perhaps the likes of John Swift and Josh Laurent, the spine there for us to go on and get enough points. In terms of this season, have we got the right strength of the squad in terms of the, obviously with all the injuries in mind as well, have we got the right spine of the team to go on and get the wins? I'm not 100% sure. In terms of you know, what we'll take to get the fans back on side, I mean, wins would help, to be honest with you. I think you know, some more positive performances will help as well, most certainly. I think, you know, we've seen some signs of us perhaps playing on the floor a little bit more in recent times. Obviously, there are times against Hull where we were kind of just lumping it to Andy Carroll, and that wasn't exactly ideal. So, you know, I think performances need to improve quite a bit, you know, for the fans to be, you know, really excited again. But ultimately, I think it is kind of results that kind of will perhaps dictate attendances and kind of the noise in the stadium, you know, unfortunately. I think that's the one main factor that will get fans kind of back on board again, is if we start picking up points. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of nervousness really around the Select Coalition Stadium at the moment. And, you know, we do need to start making sure that we're kind of getting you know, draws and victories on the board. I know that, you know, we did draw on Saturday, but it felt more like a loss really, considering the performance. So, yeah, better displays are much needed. I do think communication from the club would help. And, you know, a lot of people would ask, well, what do you want from the club at the moment? They can't outline their future plans. But as I said earlier, just make sure kind of to let fans know about what you're doing to make things better and the kind of the mechanisms that you're putting in place now to make sure that in the future, you know, you're all good and we're all kind of in a much better position. I think they kind of missed a trick with not doing kind of interviews with the likes of Brian Carey and perhaps even Jared Dublin as well. I think they missed a trick there. So, yeah, I think communication, results and displays are the three main factors for me.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that is that, I mean, I think it's performances, you know, attacking intent and stuff as well. We did come into the whole, that first half, as we were saying earlier, was really poor. And I think the Club 1871 did have a pretty poor half, generally speaking, given that you're kind of meant to get the atmosphere going. It's very quiet for the first half. And that was a result of the performance. That was a result of the team being on the back foot against a mid-table team that we would want to be beating. And, you know, we're going to have to find ways of curing that, because it is, you know, results and performances are the magic potion for any ill in this this game. But let's see if Reading can pull it out, and let's go into Newsmites then and just have a little roundup of what's been going on around the club and what we think is going to happen in the next few days.
Stay tuned for all the latest from around the Madejski Stadium and the Championship with Newsbites.
So we've got an international break, but there's going to be plenty going on over the course of the next 2 weeks across the Championship. As I said earlier, as we're recording this on Monday, we've had Wigan deducted 3 points with immediate effect. So that shoves them further down at the bottom. And we've got a very interesting scenario in that Birmingham might be having some issues, given that they just fundamentally can't prove who owns the football club, which is... I mean, I don't enjoy other clubs having issues at all, but that is a proper issue. That is really one that Reading luckily don't have, in that at least we have a name and a face that we can relate to in terms of who owns a football club. There's also maybe some issues at West Brom. Sheffield United have had to deny the fact that, or say the fact, Sheffield United have had to deny rumours that they're going into administration. Burnley are under a transfer embargo for filing their accounts late. And there's potentially some Huddersfield issues as well with their takeover. So nice and straightforward, I guess, across the league. The EFL are going to be so busy in the next couple of weeks. One hopes that they only just forget Reading exist and therefore they miss off us when it comes to these point deductions or something. But it's supposedly incoming, as I said earlier in the show. I think Paul Lynn said next Thursday. There's talk it's this week. There's talk it's going to be dragging on. I'm not going to be doing another podcast if we get up 6 points. So we'll talk as if it is happening, Adam. It's meant to be for these financial misdemeanors that happened historically, i.e., before this EFL plan came in, that Reading are having to work under very studiously. So what's the sense that you're feeling on it? Is it just, I mean, we had it on the podcast a few weeks ago when it first emerged, that we were just kind of bored of it and sick of it and not happy to having it again. where are we at now? It's kind of actually happening. Is there a proper fear behind this now that this could actually be the thing that, that tips us over the edge in terms of relegation?
Yes. I think the Warnock factor comes into mind, to be honest with you. In terms of Huddersfield on the final day of the season, I think many people mentioned it on Twitter. Warnock sending us down on the final day of his managerial career, I think would be fitting for him, really. I think for me, it's kind of the Huddersfield factor is worrying because they haven't got the best squad in the league anymore. Obviously, they've lost the likes of Harry Toffolo, Lewis O'Brien, Levi Colwill, I think, as another really important player for them who left, obviously, to go back to Chelsea. So, they haven't got the strongest squad. But in terms of, Warnock is a great firefighter. So for me, they're the team that I'm really worried about at the moment. I know that, Blackpool did do very well against QPR. I think it was last week, midweek. My main fear at the moment is Huddersfield. And it'll be interesting to see what happens kind of with their takeover problems and that sort of thing. Because I think from my understanding there, I think this was reported by Alan Nixon, they're kind of considering a kind of managed administration. So they'd be put into administration and then be kind of quickly taken out of it by a future investor. It's all very complicated, but if that happened, then it'll be a 12-point deduction. But I'm not sure whether it'll be applied this season or next season. I guess it'll probably depend on when or if they go into administration, kind of when it will happen. So it's all very confusing at the moment. I am a little bit fed up with all the deductions. I think perhaps a lot of people feel it's unfair considering, in terms of our potential points deduction, because we've abided by kind of the rules, really. If we haven't breached the business plan, that is, we've abided by the rules, and we're kind of on a much better kind of footing now in terms of the accounts were scary, but in terms of the losses coming down, that was a little bit more promising. It's still unsustainable and kind of unacceptable, really, but the fact that our wages to turnover ratio came down by pretty much 70%, that has to be kind of celebrated, really. In terms of revenue, hopefully the fans will come back and kind of boost that a little bit. And also that the losses have gone down. But we need to make sure that we see those losses continue to come down. I'm sure we'll see perhaps another kind of decrease in our losses next year, obviously because the accounts that were just released only went up until last year. So yeah, I mean in terms of the accounts, it's reasonably promising, if not a little bit terrifying in some ways. I'm a little bit sick of it at the moment. But if we've broken the rules and it's in the rule book that we've broken the rules, then we can't really have too many complaints. I think it's easy for us to blame the EFL, but if we've broken the rules and we have breached the regulations, then that's what we've done, unfortunately. And that's just a consequence of mismanagement, I'm afraid. So I can't really have too much sympathy for the football club, but I hope that we can learn from it and get back on a solid footing kind of in the future, if we do get this deduction. But for me, it's a lot of fear, to be honest with you, at the moment in terms of the 6-point deduction, because I'm not sure where our next win's coming from at the moment. And that's why I'm kind of leaning towards Ince out. So, yeah, there's a lot of fear from me.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the finances. Kieran Maguire, who on Twitter, he's author, written the Price of Football book, always gives great information, drilling into the numbers. On the balance sheet that came out for 21-22, aka last season, £17 million loss, made £8 million purely from selling Michael Olise, borrowing £9 million. Revenue was up £3 million, but wages still £150 for every £100 of revenue. Obviously, didn't sign anyone for any fees and didn't do that either this year either. Loans to the owners went down by about £26 million or so because of, or £17 million even, because kind of basically just turned it into investment as opposed to loan dealings. So that's where the club are at. I think that it has to be on a downward motion. It couldn't get any worse, could it? But yeah, I think that, as you kind of alluded to earlier, and this is the issue, is that Reading made £8 million on player sales last year. And, you know, the two main ones who left, although you could include Swift and Lauren and stuff like that, as well as Elise and Omar Richards, who, you know, Elise was the only one who got a fee for out of that. Yeah, things happen. Lots of players leave on frees, which is beyond a club's control a lot of the time. These things happen. You don't always get the best end of a deal. But for kind of those four players that I've just mentioned, that's potentially about £35 million worth of talent there that Reading got £8 million for. It's kind of the EFL's fault because they said we couldn't do contracts, but then the EFL only got involved because of Reading messing up their finances. So it does all come back to the club, unfortunately. The EFL is a shambles. The way they're having to deal with all these different clubs going mental now is because of the lack of regulation and the wrong people being involved in football, which isn't Reading's fault. You know, it's not the individual club's fault a lot of the time, certainly not the fans' fault or the players. You know, it's not the players' fault at Wigan that they're not being paid on time, is it? And all the stuff that's gone on there the last few years. So we could have an entire new podcast on what's gone wrong at Reading, but I think Reading fans pretty much have a good idea, don't they? So yeah, that's the situation with the points deduction and finances. Keep an eye on the Tyler Stem for any more updates on that. Any, obviously, announcements coming out in the next few days and weeks. Rounding off news bites, we'll talk about the other clubs around, or the other teams around the club. Women's team got to the FA Cup quarterfinal on the weekend, but lost at home to Chelsea 3-1. They're now up in action next on Sunday. That's March 26th. 2 p.m. kickoff at the Select Car Leasing Stadium, Brighton at home. So get your football fix with the women's team on Saturday or Sunday even, this coming weekend with the men's team off. Under-21s, they are away at Marlow in the Barks and Bucks Cup semi-final on Tuesday evening. So a lovely little local derby for the youngsters there. 1-1 versus Watford, then a 3-1 defeat to Swansea this week. They're now fifth in the table. The under-18s, meanwhile, are fourth in their table, having beaten Watford and Barnsley. They go to Crewe on Saturday. Right then, let's go to the final part of this week's show, the big match preview.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So, April the 1st, then, Saturday, Reading are in action at Bristol City. And, you know, Adam, this is one of those games that I think we would all agree that Bristol City are the favourites going into it, above us in the table, et cetera, et cetera. This is actually one of the games that you can make statistics really draw any kind of picture that you want out of this. Bristol City have not scored in five of their last six games, and their season is basically over like Reading. So that's kind of in our favour, right? Now, they've actually not been beaten at home in the league since Boxing Day and have had three clean sheets of their last four in that regard. And we're obviously the worst away team in the division. That's a fact, because Huddersfield won on the weekend. So we are the worst away team in the division. So which of those two set of facts are you going to be focusing on when Reading go to Ashton Gate in a fortnight?
I think it might be a bit of a mix. I think it's just strange with Bristol City. I think they win. Didn't they go like a year without a win under Nigel Pearson at Ashton Gate? I think it was something like that, something ridiculous. And now their home form is decent. I think that's typical Bristol City, to be honest with you. I think it's up and down, up and down, up and down, kind of in terms of their club at the moment. Obviously, they had to kind of cut their cloth, really, when COVID hit, and they kind of tried to kind of abide by FFP. Obviously, they sold Antoine Semenyo in January, brought in Mometi from Wickham, and kind of balanced the books, really. So fair play to them for that. I think the one thing that we've got to focus on, really, is the fact that Bristol City probably don't have a lot to play for, as you say. So for us, you know, we've got to try and go there and get the victory. Obviously, but I think it was last year we lost 2-1 there. But we've got a different set of players now, and you know, we've got a lot to play for. So, you know, I wouldn't say I'm hopeful, considering our away form isn't great. In terms of their attackers, they've got some fantastic attacking talent there. I think that, you know, Alex Scott, even though he's a midfielder, he can be a real force kind of going forward. Naki Wells has kind of provides them with a little bit of experience. Obviously, Mometi is an exciting new signing. Tommy Conway, as well. I'm not sure, 100% sure if he's fit, but he's a talented young striker, and Sam Bell, and they've got a lot of you know, attacking talent there with the likes of Andreas Weimann as well. So, you know, it's a surprise really that they their scoring record hasn't been brilliant kind of in recent times. That's kind of come as a real surprise to me. I always kind of associate them with having perhaps a dodgy defence. So, you know, the fact that they haven't been scoring too much either kind of makes things a little bit more promising. But, you know, this is a game that we should perhaps be getting something out of. I'm not underestimating Bristol City because, you know, they can be fantastic at times. And, you know, they were, I think, in pretty decent form during the early stages of this calendar year. But we've got to go in there with a little bit of optimism and go forward and go forward with a little bit of attacking intent. You know, we've got the ingredients there, even with the current injured players that we have. You know, you've still got an 11 there that I identified earlier with the 3-4-2-1 formation that can go forward and can be a threat, you know, whether that's on the break or whether that's us dominating the game. You know, as I said before, I'm not deluded. I know this isn't the best squad in the world, but, you know, let's be optimistic. Let's kind of be positive and go forward.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I doubt that's going to happen because that's just not how Paul Ince has done it, is it? And I'd be surprised if we go into this and have a massive change. I guess the good thing is that like Bristol City, we have got a couple of weeks on the training pitch now. Let's have some more meaningless stats then. We've only drawn one of our last 20 meetings with Bristol City. In that time, we've come from behind twice, from two goals down to win at Ashton Gate. And Adam, I'm going to throw some trivia at you. Can you name one of the players who scored those last minute winners in those games?
You're going to have to repeat it and then I'll have a think.
Well, I'll give you the years. So in 2011 and in 2017, yeah, Reading went to Bristol City, were 2-0 down and then 1-3-2 with last minute winners.
Right.
So it was the two players that scored. It wouldn't be the same player. Right. Maybe. I can't think of anyone who's playing in both of those games.
Right. Matthew Monse for 2011 and 2017 was Jan Kermagan, because I know that Liam Kelly scored the first and I think it was a Kermagan brace.
Yeah, bingo, absolutely. The first person ever to get my trivia questions right in the 6 weeks that I've been doing it in the podcast. Congratulations. That was two games, obviously, quite early in the 11-12 championship winning season, that one. I think it was a Tuesday night, quite a good, but I mean, it was actually a both games, so they're both good times, to be fair. But yeah, Jan Kermagan with a bit of a long-range ping in the 93rd minute. And generally speaking, this is a team that we have a good record against. As away games go, it's quite a lot of good performances. Michael Morrison's chip over COVID to beat them that season away from home. So it's just difficult. I think that my optimism is tempered by the fact that I just don't see Paul Ince bringing his team there and doing anything other than what we've done previously, and that is sit in and try and dig something out. And it might work, but I'm not a fan of it. So I'm not going to start backing it now when we are literally speaking the worst team in the league away from home. And we might have a 6-point deduction by then, which could change things. So let's do some predictions to round off the show. Quite a few points scored this week. Sim actually got Blackburn 2-1 and a draw versus Hull. We all said we'd lose to Blackburn, though, so we all picked up at least a point there. Current leaderboard stands at Ben Thomas on 28. Adam, you're second on 25. We've got Westy on 24. Sim, 23. Dave Hambag-Harris on 20. Myself on 17. Ollie Allen on 14 points. So bit of a four-horse, maybe even five-horse race brewing to over the last eight games to claim the title. Also, Adam, I'll let you throw in a prediction for Bristol City now. Do feel free to change it in a fortnight's time when we've been, you know, thrown out of the league or something.
Yeah. I hope that my optimism my pessimism come back to bite me in terms of kind of losing the TT Prediction League. But for this one, I'm going to go with a 2-0 Bristol City win. I just, as you say, I can't see Paul Ince doing very much kind of after the international break in terms of changing his approach. I think he's quite stubborn in terms of that. Now I know that he has changed formations and we've passed it on the floor a little bit more, but I think for me, I just go into away games with a sense of kind of inevitability that we're going to lose, and I hate that, and that's one of the reasons why for me I'm edging towards Ince, that kind of Ince out, perhaps not even edging, kind of going full on kind of Ince out for me. So yeah, I'm going to go with a 2-0 Bristol City loss, but hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 3-0 myself at the moment because, yeah, I just think that if they score early, given that they're a team that's been playing okay but not getting the results they deserve, perhaps, and we've not been playing okay, it could end up going that way. But, you know, let's see what happens. We've got a fortnight now to think about things and to get our house in order and hopefully not be too much of a disaster with that. And as I said earlier, keep an eye on the Tarleton blog and the website for the next couple of weeks to keep on top of things and everything that's going on around the club. We'll also have a couple of podcasts coming up for you as well. Bit of thoughts of better times, shall we say, that'll be coming up later in the week. And that is that for this episode then. Thank you very much, Adam, for popping on. There's so much to talk about. I think we've just about done it in under an hour.
No, absolutely perfect. No, thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
And thanks for everyone that's listening. Thanks for everyone who continues to stick through the podcast that talks about very little else but away defeats and points deductions. Here's to better times coming up soon. Maybe not quite that soon, though. Come on, you ass.
This biscuit.